Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Early Sunday morning, the Illinois General Assembly wrapped up a four-day legislative session. Wearing masks and keeping socially distant, they did so without the usual swarm of lobbyists and members of the public to bear witness. But two people who were there to bear witness are joining us this morning to recap the session. Rick Pearson is chief political reporter with the Chicago Tribune and host of The Sunday Spin, heard Sunday afternoons on WGN Radio in Chicago. Rick, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with me this morning.
Brian, good to be with you.
And Hannah Meisel, who's Springfield reporter for The Daily Line, an online news source. Hannah, welcome back to the 21st.
Glad to be here.
So, Rick, I want to begin with you because you have covered a lot of sessions of the Illinois General Assembly. Have you ever seen anything like this with the masks and the, you know, renting out the convention center and things like that?
No. And, of course, obviously, these are strange times for all of us. And just to be clear, I was not in Springfield.
Sure.
I was kind of quarterbacking things. But, you know, of course, a lot of jokes being made about members of the political class showing their true colors by wearing masks. That having been said, I do think, despite the fact that the House met, you know, blocks away from the State House, the Senate meeting in its chambers, kind of that physical divide, the physical divide of the contact, and that's always kind of the glue that makes legislative sessions go, I think there was more of a sense of purpose in doing something among the legislators as a whole than what you normally see in a session with that, you know, expands for multiple days. There's no kind of sense of urgency. There's never obviously been anything of this level to be addressed by a General Assembly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, against that backdrop, I just sensed a different attitude among lawmakers.
And Hannah, what about you? You were in Springfield for session. What was the mood like on the ground? Did you even run into other people, or were you mostly just keeping to yourself in the press room? What was it like?
You know, I didn't actually go into either the Capitol or the Convention Center. Yeah. I did visit outside the Convention Center one day to view the protesters who were present on the first day of session. But you know, I think it was pretty tense in the beginning. You could see that. And throughout the 4 days, I think as people, you know, lawmakers and staff got a feel for how things were going, I think it became a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more back to normal when, of course, you know, nothing is normal about this, but at least you have, you know, the very weird, unique rhythm of session that helps people, you know, sit, like, we're here for this common purpose. We got to get out of here and get everything done. And they were able to accomplish that with only one unplanned day of session.
Yeah. So, all right, let's talk about some of the things that they were able to get done. And Hannah, let's start with the state budget. This is arguably the most important piece of legislation that, the state passes every year. You know, what's the sort of thumbnail sketch of the Illinois budget for the next fiscal year, which begins on July 1st?
Right. So though we are, we've already lost a lot of revenue in this current fiscal year, which hasn't even ended yet, and we're projected to lose, you know, billions more next year. It's actually basically the same budget that we had last year, 40-some billion dollars. It relies instead on, you know, the expected revenues that we would have gotten in normal times. We're going to borrow $5 billion from the Federal Reserve and also count on you know, another big congressional stimulus package down the line. When that's going to happen, no one is truly certain. Of course, Republicans are upset that the objective is to balance a budget, but, you know, the Constitution isn't necessarily specific on how you balance that budget. And so we're relying on a lot of federal help here. You know, there are a couple places here and there where the budget, you know, funding was decreased from last year, but for the most part, it's maintenance. And then there are some areas of the budget like child welfare and human services that are getting boosts because, you know, after the pandemic is over, or at least as things begin to loosen up, there's a pretty prevalent belief among people who are in, human services, child welfare sectors, that there's going to be an explosion of need, because you had families who are very, very stressed out, basically at home altogether, for weeks upon weeks. And though, for example, calls to the child welfare hotline for Department of Children and Family Services have been way down, there's actually a belief that child abuse and neglect is way up.
So briefly, before we move off the budget topic, this is always something that gets a headline every year. Are state lawmakers getting a raise this year? I recognize the answer might be a little complicated, but as simplified as you can, can you address that point?
It is complicated. So, legislators actually have an automatic cost of living increase, and for many years, they have actually voted to not give themselves, but they have to take that action to not give themselves the cost of living increase. Last year, for the first time in many years, they actually voted or didn't do that, and so they essentially got that increase. And this year, they didn't actually put the language in to cancel that out. However, they're arguing that there's an agreement with the comptroller to not pay it out and that there's not actually money appropriated. However, they by not, putting it in language, they've now created a huge brouhaha for themselves.
Yeah, and it seems like if somebody sues, I guess they can still, it seems like even though if the money's not there, they may have to, a judge could force the controller's hand. If you're just joining us, you're listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Hannah Meisel, who's Springfield reporter for The Daily Line, and Rick Pearson, chief political reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Rick, the usual money in Springfield is against. I'm going to like mix my metaphors here, but you usually bet against gambling expansion legislation. And we had a big step forward last year, but Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot wanted some change around that. And although there was a lot of doubt heading into this brief special session, she was able to pull it off. Can you talk a little bit about what Chicago got for their gambling, Rick?
Brian, I'm like you. I mean, when there was talk of trying to advance a critical item on Mayor Lightfoot's agenda by changing the tax structure for a Chicago casino, I kind of rolled my eyes and went, well, here comes the Christmas tree bill where everybody loads it up with everything and it falls over of its own weight. But it was a pretty miraculous passage of this legislation, and in many respects, bipartisan passage. Basically, I'm not going to go too far into the weeds because there's a lot of technical things, but I think the easiest way to sum it up is that after Chicago was authorized to have a casino, study was done, came back and basically said that you wouldn't find a developer based under the current tax structure that the legislature passed it. A lot of upfront kind of money required from a developer, a lot of early big money before the thing is kind of established, and those issues were relaxed. And so one of the things that I think was a leading factor in this moving through was the fact that lawmakers basically have made a Chicago casino, the state revenue portion of that, as a critical part of the $45 billion public works package that they had previously approved. And if the casino ain't moving, there's a lot of roads and bridges across the state that are going to be in a world of hurt. This gave downstate lawmakers something in exchange for voting something that could be perceived as, pretty much Chicago. There were a couple of downstate elements in it, video gaming at the state fairs, but, are we going to have a state fair in
Yeah, good
DuPont or
question.
Springfield? There was some technical changes for a casino in Danville, but this was really a big win. And I should add too that everybody talks about pensions and the city's share of casino tax revenues are earmarked to shore up the city's police and fire pension.
Well, more to come from that. And I guess as there is hunger for jobs and be, this having state government spend on construction, that maybe explains a little bit about why people were willing to take that leap. Rick, I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that didn't happen, which was a vote on the governor's phased reopening plan. You know, the governor had this emergency rule that would have allowed for misdemeanor offenses for business owners who violate the stay-at-home orders. And I think we had heard calls for having the legislature weigh in on this reopening. What can you say about why that didn't happen?
I think one good reason is because, now this was something Republicans were pushing, was they wanted an up or down vote on the governor's phased-in reopening plan. I think there's a good reason here, and I think it's because it's not totally partisan here, is that there are a number of people on the Democratic side who aren't happy with the way things are going. Some of them siding with their local officials in Democratic areas, supporting an earlier reopening than the governor has proposed. The emergency rule that would have created that misdemeanor penalty for business owners that violated the stay-at-home order that was pulled from a legislative rulemaking committee, in part because there was the belief that even though it was a bipartisan panel, Democrats would join with Republicans to quash it. So I think this was more of a protective measure by letting, let the Republicans complain about it, but for Democrats, I think it was more a protective measure for the governor and not facing a vote that could be very embarrassing.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to The 21st. That's Rick Pearson. He's chief political reporter at the Chicago Tribune. We're also speaking with Hannah Meisel, Springfield reporter for The Daily Line. So, Hannah, talking about the governor's, you know, phased plan for reopening, by the end of the week, most of Illinois is set to move into phase three, the next phase of the governor's reopening plan. Can you give us just briefly, and we're coming to the end of our segment in a few minutes here, but what is a sort of thumbnail sketch of what people can expect as the state moves into this next phase?
Right. So the big news last week was that the governor changed his mind, or you could say caved to pressure from that restaurant industry, and restaurants will be, and bars will be able to reopen for outdoor seating with tables 6 feet apart. Beyond that, businesses are still being encouraged to let people work from home, but some offices may open back up with, you know, a maximum amount of people allowed, 50% of capacity. You know, gyms will reopen with social distancing guidelines. Salons, you know, you can go get your nails done so long as you wear a face covering and, you know, the person giving you a manicure gives you a face covering. Youth sports can resume practices, but not games. They'll have to socially distance. So, you know, tackle football will probably be out of the question, but maybe they can do drills. Driving ranges, shooting ranges will reopen. Youth camps, that's a big deal for working parents. They will be able to reopen with, capacity guidelines, social distancing guidelines.
Rick, does all that apply up in Chicago too? And I wonder if you're seeing up there people getting antsy with the restrictions. I was struck, I went to a garden center over the weekend, and I was struck by the number of people not wearing masks, whereas in previous trips to grocery stores and other essential shopping I've done, I was impressed that most people were wearing masks, but a lot of them seem to be kind of getting tired of that.
Yeah, and I think too, obviously with the weather change, and certainly, you know, yesterday was just such a glorious day, and it was almost kind of like you could see that people were almost kind of breaking out of hibernation kind
sure.
of thing. And there were Wrigleyville was swarmed with people. Other places were swarmed with people. I noticed too fewer people wearing masks. I just don't know if people just felt a certain liberation from the weather and what that means going forward. But Mayor Lightfoot, the municipalities are allowed to move more strictly than the governor's orders. So the lakefront's still closed. Some most city golf courses are closed. Restaurants are not going to be able to do that outdoor kind of situation of seating until more strict guidelines are put into place. So it's going to be more of a phase in Chicago than it is probably elsewhere in the state.
The mayor apparently trying to call into the show right now.
Yes, indeed.
Hannah, it's all right. It's live radio. Hannah, last question to you. I just briefly, there's so much to talk about that we're not going to be able to get to, and we will, of course, link to yours and Rick's and his colleagues' stories on our Twitter page, which is 21ST Show. That's 21st Show. But one thing that didn't happen, Hannah, and again, just in about 30 seconds, if you can, is this idea of moving to virtual legislating. There was a lot of consternation when this legislation was debated on the floor. Can you briefly recount what might have been?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised by the debate, but it makes sense. So, for example, Tim Butler, the representative that represents here in Springfield, he was very offended by the notion that even, while the pandemic still goes on, that they would even consider remote legislating. And, because the Constitution says it should, legislating should go on in the seat of government. And then he also had people come to his defense saying it blocks out people being able to participate in the process. And then, of course, what we've all experienced during this pandemic, Zoom is it's fine, but it's not ideal. Lots of technology snafus, things happen, and it's not as effective. And they said, we were able to get things done because we were here in Springfield together.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Hannah Meisel is Springfield reporter for the Daily Line. We've also been speaking with Rick Pearson, chief political reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Hannah, Rick, thanks so much for spending your morning with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, a conversation about Miles Davis, who would have turned 94 today. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us, more to come.